you see us, you see, you know, other entrepreneurial couples working together, everything's going great. Then you look at your spouse and you're like, man, how do I get her excited? Because I could really use her help, right? Or I could really use his help. Well, here's the thing. I don't believe that you can get somebody excited about something they're just not excited about.
I'm Michael Mogul, founder and CEO of Crisp, the nation's number one law firm growth company. I've built my business through practice, not theory. Crisp started with just $500 to my name and has grown to over eight figures in revenue over the last few years, earning a spot on the Inc. 500 list of the fastest growing private companies in America. Our approach has been to take everything we've learned about generating massive growth within our own organization and help the country's most ambitious and committed law firm owners do the same for theirs. In each episode of this podcast, I sit down with innovative market leaders from the legal industry and beyond to learn from those who thrive in the face of adversity, challenge the status quo, and define what it means to be a true game changer.
This is Jessica, Head of Coaching Strategy at Crisp, and today we're flipping the script for another special edition episode to get Michael's take on how to provide uncomfortable yet critical feedback to your co-working spouse, how to address and resolve conflicting business beliefs, and more do's and don'ts of working with your spouse.
If you got two people that are like YOLO, you're going to go broke and run out of money. So it's good to have the person who like kind of pumps the brakes and the, you know, does the checks and balances. Usually you see one is a little bit more liberal and one's a little bit more conservative when it comes to investments in the firm. And it's good to have that.
That's coming up on the Game Changing Attorney Podcast. Here we are for another AMMA. This one's going to be a spicy one.
Another one.
Here we are.
I'm excited, Jessica. Are you excited?
Always.
Welcome to the AMMA. You guys submit the questions, and then I guess we answer them. You can submit the questions at 404-531-7691, and we might just answer it on the show. And if you're just tuning into the podcast for the first time, you're wondering what the hell is going on? Well, we've got three different types of episodes on this podcast. We've got our traditional interview format where we bring in an expert. Could be an elite athlete, could be a best-selling author, could be a great trial attorney, and we pick their brains and provide all their great insights on this podcast. So that is the traditional interview format. Then we bring back some of our most popular episodes, and we call those the Encore Editions. I know we've been sharing some of those recently, so you know, we're almost 300 episodes. So there's been so many that we've done over the years, and we like to bring back some of the most popular ones. And then finally, you're listening to it, the AMMA, which has strangely become our most popular episode on the podcast, which is odd to me, but people seem to like it. We'll keep doing it so long as they like it. I'll tell you what, though. Those of you listening to this podcast right now, got a big day tomorrow. Got a real big day. I'm nervous. I am getting LASIK eye surgery, okay? Someone's like, well, why are you doing that? And I said, well, a lot of people told me it was the best thing they've ever done in their entire life. Like, married people have told me this is the best thing they've ever done in their entire life. So I'm like, wow, it's like the best thing.
Up to today right there.
I know. Must be pretty great. So I'm absolutely terrified at the idea of having surgery done on my eyes, but they tell me, hey, man, you're going to be in and out in 15 minutes. So then I go and Google online and I say, hey, what's this process like and what's the recovery process like? Don't ever do that. Don't ever go and search that online about any type of procedure, because then you hear about like, this is the absolute worst thing I've ever done in my entire life and I regret it immensely. So here's the thing. The good news is that we have a few people getting this LASIK surgery, you're being one of them. But we said that if you botch my surgery, then Jessica's not getting hers later. So maybe that's more incentive to do a really great job. But that's tomorrow. And this is today. Let's get on with the questions.
All righty. It's been workshop season. So I've seen a lot of clients, about 1,000 of them now this month. And oddly enough, at every single workshop, someone approached me about working with you. Not just you, but working with my spouse. So, of course, I directed them and said, let's hear the specific questions, send them in, let's see what's going on. And I think there's a lot to unpack here for a lot of people. So there we have it. Let's get started.
Let's unpack it.
All right. First one, my wife runs the operations department at our firm and is a key leadership team member. While I have no problem giving direct and sometimes uncomfortable feedback to the other department leads, I find myself holding back when it comes to my wife. Partly because I know she's more sensitive than I am, but also because I can't just leave that difficult conversation at the office. How do you approach situations like this?
Well, I guess you just got to decide what's more important to you. You know, your business or your marriage. That's it.
We're going about 10 years strong with the business.
There you go, right? You just got to figure it out. Pick one, right? You can't say, oh, they both, you know, they're both equally important because one's going to be more important than the other. And what I mean by this is that the way we've always approached it, at least the way we've always aimed to approach, you'd have to ask somebody else if we've done this successfully. I believe we have, is that if we are, let's say, working in the business, the way we would deliver feedback to one of our leaders or department heads would be no different than the way we deliver feedback to one another, right? So there's no, like, there's no favoritism. We try to be very objective. I know a lot of people that when they start at Crisp, especially years ago.
Before I was a mogul.
Before your last name is what it was, they would go months, if not sometimes a whole year, not even know that we were married. There's no, like, affectionate play at the office. I think that's, you know, tremendously inappropriate. That being said, it's like, look, if you got to deliver some feedback to your spouse, and you're worried that they're going to take it the wrong way, and you work in the business together, well, that could put you in a very precarious position because you want things to improve or you want things to change in some way, but you're kind of biting your tongue because you're saying, well, I don't want the argument, right? And you got to go home with this person. I think that's the crux of it, right? It's like you can deliver constructive feedback to a team member. You don't got to go home with them, right? That would be tremendously inappropriate, right? As we were saying earlier. Now, we talk a lot about Colby and print and understanding like how, you know, each individual works together and using EQ and emotional intelligence. So again, I am not great at this. Okay, so I will preface by saying that this is not an area where I am exceptionally strong, but it is an area where I'm trying to become better and improve and is a growth opportunity for me. And what I mean by this is that, you know, I've often been told it's not what you say, it is how you say it, right? It is your tone.
Who has told you that?
I don't know. Maybe she's sitting right across from me. So my point here is that if you know this person and you know that if you come on like gangbusters, they're going to shut down completely. And if they hear the feedback, they're not going to, you know, they're not going to listen to it. They're going to shut it all out. Maybe that's not the right approach. Maybe the best approach is, because you still got to deliver the feedback, is to take the emotion out of it and, you know, be in an environment where the time to deliver feedback is not when things are super high stress and you're freaking out and you're picking up the kids are screaming and like, you know, saying, hey, let me tell you about something that, you know, I wish we would have done differently in the meeting. Like, are you kidding me? Now, the time to do it is to set aside time, like during business hours, and address the concerns, but address them in the way where it's very objective, where it's data driven, where you can align. I mean, if you're working with your spouse, it's your venture together. So it's, you know, making sure that you two are aligned on the actual growth of the law firm. And here's why, right? I'm not like delivering this feedback because I'm trying to hurt your feelings. I'm delivering this feedback because maybe, you know, it's not always got to be, you know, some criticism. Sometimes it's seeking out understanding of like, help me understand like why you approached it in this way, right? There might be some side of, you know, of whatever the scenario is that you don't understand, or there might be a blind spot. So I would always come at it from a standpoint of questions instead of statements. I think that's probably important as I'm thinking through this. And then also not personalizing it. I think that's another big thing. What do you think, Jessica? Any other thoughts on here? Because
how much time do we have?
Oh, well, this is an AMMA, so 30 minutes to 3 hours.
Let's see. So first and foremost, I will just say, yes, it has worked tremendously well for us. I mean, we're going on about a decade of actually working together now.
Yeah.
It is not for everyone. And so I think it's like not forcing that to be a thing. And so there's that side of it. You have absolutely always actually been harder on me than anyone else. And I guess I probably came in with a little bit of chip on my shoulder, too. Like, I didn't want special treatment. I didn't want to be seen as like, oh, that's, you know, at the time, Michael's girlfriend or whatever. So I was accepting of the fact that you were going to be probably harder on me than anyone else. I know you reference print. So we talk about print all the time in the assessments and just like how to best communicate. The funny thing is we actually didn't know print when we first started working together. So we could actually laugh when we first read the results and was like, wow, it's a miracle that we actually are married and you work together, because we could not be any more different. It's not personal. It's also learning to separate it, which is very hard. Like you said, you're going home to this person. And I will say kids has helped with that, because we're very intentional about not talking about business and work all the time around them. Like, yes, they hear it, but we're not going to talk about the problems in front of them. So that has helped. Are there times you can't separate it? 100%. I mean, I would actually say probably before we brought in a COO, before we had children, like it was 24/7, the business. And so it's not easy. But I think if your spouse wants to get the same amount of respect, they have to be able to tolerate the exact same way that you treat everyone else.
Yeah, maybe have a conversation about having difficult conversations, and more so saying that, like, look, when we need to discuss something with one another, whether it's you have feedback for me or I have feedback for you, what is the best way for me to deliver said feedback? Just discussing that upfront, so you kind of understand the rules of engagement and really understanding like how somebody, you know, receives information, what works best for them. Like, you know, I'm someone that doesn't like the drive-by conversation of like on my way to somewhere else, someone's saying, oh yeah, here's this big problem. Thank you very much, right? Can't really do anything about it right now, right? So I like to have a set time and a dedicated time to be able to focus on those things.
Yeah, and I would even say it's so minor, but our commute is like 10 minutes from the office, but even sometimes just not riding together, just to have that separation for like a moment of the day, because you literally are together like 24/7. And yeah, and giving feedback on that. I'm glad that you've listened, Michael. It is not what you say, it is how you say it.
I'm a little scared right now, but let's move on to the second question.
Next question. I have been working very hard to work on my business instead of in it this quarter, and I am proud of the progress I've made. Hiring a new legal assistant, launching a new marketing campaign, and even mapping out the 5-year vision for my firm. My spouse has raised his concern, stating that the investments I've been making seem more like cost. Have you and Jessica ever had conflicting beliefs about the investments in the business? If so, how did you work through them?
It's a great question. So in this scenario, we've got a what sounds like extremely ambitious, extremely committed female firm owner, right? And then she's doing a lot of great things at her law firm. She's putting a lot of initiatives in place. They got that 5-year vision, making a lot of investments in the firm. These are all wonderful things. I mean, they sound like where we are, Chris Coach members. Her husband has some concerns about all the investments she's making. So it's like, what is the best way to approach that?
Again, is it the business or the marriage, which is more important?
Well, I mean, if I were in her shoes, I would say, hey, man, don't be a little bitch. But obviously, you can't just say that, right? Unless they truly are being a little bitch. But here's where I think it stems from. And it's actually a good thing. I think it's a great thing to have this type of dynamic. Because if you got two people that are like, YOLO, you're going to go broke and run out of money. Okay, because if they're just like yes to everything. So it's good to have the person who like kind of pumps the brakes and does the checks and balances of saying like, hey, usually you see one is a little bit more liberal and one's a little bit more conservative when it comes to investments in the firm. And it's good to have that, you know, to be able to put all the different investments through that type of lens and parameter. Because one, you know, just sees the upside and the other one may just see the downside. And when you bring those two people together, you can get a much clearer picture of whether that's a good investment or not. And both can align. I mean, you see this, you know, anytime anybody has anybody in a finance role or a CFO role, the CFO's job is basically to say no, right? Pretty much all the time, it's like, nope, we don't want to spend money, right? Same thing really if you ever work with a CPA firm. Every time I had a really cool idea, they're like, nope, I don't think you should do that. Nope, I don't think you should give that car away. Nope. And it's not that, you know, they don't want you to succeed. It's just that they look at it and all they see is risk, right? And you as an entrepreneur, if you tend to be the visionary, all you see is opportunity. So it's being able to bring those two together. And I think we've never had those conflicting beliefs. One, because we have very clear lanes in the business. I've always been very much focused on kind of the growth side of the business, let's say the marketing, the sales, and you've been focusing on the operational side. And then we've also had a pretty good track record with it, right? So it's not like, you know, I threw all of our money in, you know, NFTs and now it's gone. And like, and I mean, if that happened, you'd be like, all right, well, maybe we got to, you know, have a little more of an approval process before you go out and spend all of our money. Right. So I think we've had a pretty good track record of making decisions, you know, and I'm also, you know, I always share with you typically before I make the decision or right after, here's what we're doing. Right. So, I mean,
I actually appreciate that. The thing is again, because of the lanes, like you are the visionary, you are the one who thinks big. And so it takes all of that off of me. So it's like, great, we're going to do this. And so I'm like, okay, great. I'll figure out how. And that's fine. And so I think the lanes are really important there, of course. And we've just always really had an understanding from the beginning, and I think a trust also there from the very beginning, both personally and professionally, of simply being fiscally responsible. Like, yeah. I've never once questioned that you weren't responsible with the decisions.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, before we had a CFO, I was essentially de facto CEO or CFO for, you know, a little over a decade. And we were looking at the P&Ls every single day, the balance sheets every single day. Like, I mean, I'm someone, I'd refresh the checking account 12 times a day. I could tell you to the hour how much we had in the account all the time, because I was, you know, I'm not just obsessed, I was paranoid, and I still am. I mean, I don't think that ever leaves you. I think it's important to know your numbers and know your metrics. So I came in with that type of mindset. And if you don't have that type of mindset, it's important that at least somebody does, right? It doesn't have to be you. Maybe it's your spouse. Maybe it's, you know, somebody in a finance role at your firm. But I think that way you can make sure that, you know, you are making good decisions. And I'll also say that this also comes back to where every year when we're doing like our, you know, our targets and our, you know, kind of our vision for the upcoming years, and we're doing all the planning, and we're planning every single quarter and every single month, and we're looking at like budgets and the investments we're going to make, like we have an idea where we're going to go and what numbers we want to hit and like how we want the business to grow and so on. And when we are making certain investments, it's in alignment with what's kind of the North Star. right? Of like, what are the key results we're trying to achieve? I'll give you an example. It's like, if we talk about, you know, wanting to, you know, double the size of our like Chris Coach community, there's a number of ways in which we can do that. We can host different types of events. We can run different types of campaigns. We can do all sorts of things like to really invest in that community. But if I were to go out and say, hey, you know what? We're going to start a virtual reality initiative. You'd be like, what the hell? What does that have to do with expanding our community? Right. So it's important that you have clarity first on like what the actual objectives are, like what the goal is in the business, and aligning the investments that you're making with supporting those, you know, with supporting those goals. I can't think of a time where we've made some sort of investment. We've certainly made ones that have not panned out, certainly made bad investments, but it was never anything that did not align with a goal that we were trying to achieve or a direction in which we were trying to take the business.
Yeah. I think it's always, if you don't have that trust already and you don't have that like, hey, I know this person's responsible, always tying it back to like why. And it's like, hey, this is what I'm investing in and this is why. And look at all the forward progress we've made from my prior investments. And I'm thinking of one client in particular recently, like she had a really huge case and she's like, no questions asked. She's like, I'm pouring it all back in the business. And it's like, okay, but you see, you have to paint that picture of why.
Yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned an important point, because it's like a lot of it's the results. So we don't have a lot of context in the scenario, and that we don't know your previous track record. And, you know, I'm a big believer in that trust can be lost. Trust is not the sort of thing you have to earn so much. Like if you start with someone, you start with trust, right? Until they have done something to lose said trust, I'd say you trust them, right? As opposed to the other way, which is kind of a cynical way to live. That being said, maybe, you know, you came into the marriage and you guys made a series of bad financial decisions. Maybe you made bad financial decisions. You lost all the money, right? So now your spouse is asking questions when he sees you investing more money now that you finally climbed out from under that debt, right? Who could blame them? Who could blame them? So it's important that I think you can establish a strong track record. And maybe if you don't have a great track record, then they're in the right to be asking these questions. And at the same time, it's like you have to make sure that you two are in alignment at the end of the day. You know, both sides have to feel comfortable. You don't want to be making decisions where one's comfortable and one's completely uncomfortable all the time. Like, I don't think that's good for any relationship. I don't think that's good for any marriage. But at the same time, like, I mean, imagine you make a series of investments and they continue to pay off and they continue to pay off and they continue to pay off. I can promise you that whoever's asking all these damn questions will start to ask a bunch of less questions once they start to see the money piling up and if they start to see those results. As long as that mailbox money's coming in, right? They're like, oh, sure, okay, yeah, no questions. Probably better that I don't ask. Just get on the same page. That's the main thing. But also know that having that person there that can, you know, kind of scrutinize and ask a few questions is not a bad thing. You want people to poke holes in it. I know you've done this with a lot of ideas that we've had in the past. You know, certainly the ones that I've had in the past. I think it's a wonderful thing. That way you can make sure that you've got enough supporting evidence behind what it is that you're trying to do to ensure that that is a truly a good investment.
All right, last one to close it out here. So I think it's awesome that you and Jessica work together at Crisp and how you've grown the business. I would love for my wife to be a part of my firm too, but every time I try to get her involved, conferences, whatever it may be, she's just not interested. How can I get her excited about this stuff?
Ooh, now we're talking. You saved the best for last. Man, I know you see us, you see Jessica, you see, you know, other entrepreneurial couples working together, everything's going great. Then you look at your spouse and you're like, man, how do I get her excited? Because I could really use her help, right? Or I could really use his help. Could be, you know, it doesn't matter. Male spouse, female spouse, et cetera. Well, here's the thing. This might be a little bit of a controversial perspective. I don't believe that you can get somebody excited about something they're just not excited about. It just may not be their thing. And you're trying to turn them into like this entrepreneur or this operator. I'm like, come into the business with me. It's like, you know, they do it. Why can't we? And maybe it's just not their thing. Yeah. It's not what excites them. I mean, we see this all the time. Sometimes in law practice, you've got one person who loves to try cases and wants to have nothing to do with the business. Then you have somebody else, another partner who loves the business side, wants to have nothing to do with trying cases. And then you have the type of person at home who wants nothing to do with the damn business, period. But that doesn't make them a bad person. They can have other strengths, right? There's other things that they do well. Maybe they raise your damn kids, right? While you were out there burning the midnight oil trying to build the business, maybe they made sure that your kids grew up with certain brains and values. I don't know. Or maybe they didn't. Maybe they did something else. Who knows? But you made your choice. And it's a little bit late at this point in the game to try to figure out why can't I like change this person into being the person that I would like for them to be. Look, it's just not their thing. Treat it like a hiring process, though it's a little bit late at this point, right? Once you're married and you got kids, and maybe it's not too late. I mean, for some. But this is one of these things you figure out early on, kind of in the dating phase. Jessica, you were in consulting, right?
Yeah.
I was just starting the business. All we talked about when we went on dates was business. And I was like, oh, as it turns out, I think we can have business conversations. But you don't want to get 10 years in, 15, 20 years in, and then start having business conversations and find out this person's not interested. Okay? They don't want to talk about that. They want to talk about something else. That's okay. So this is one of those things. If you're looking for your spouse to be your business partner and be engaged and interested in the business, and your spouse isn't that, your options are you can either find a new spouse who is business-minded, or you can just accept the fact that this is not their thing. And that's absolutely okay, because chances are you married them not because they were interested in business, but because they had a lot of other great qualities. My point is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, this is one of those things that it is what it is and you can't change it. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it even has to be that way. Like, your spouse doesn't have to be in the business with you. They don't have to be your business partner. You could have a great leadership team and great leaders that you could talk to business about all day long, and that's fine. And then you can just go on a date with your spouse and talk about anything else. And that can be life.
I was half joking, but I was like, you could have me at home or you could have me at the business. And I very quickly told you I would be much more beneficial at the business than I would be at home. And that's why I have so much respect, actually, for the people who aren't in the business. Like, I have so many friends who are stay-at-home moms, and I could never. Like, I really just couldn't. I love my children dearly, but this is what I'm passionate about and excited about. And I don't think you can force that, because I don't think it would end well if you did force it, because you've essentially got someone just completely going against themselves. So it's awareness all around. So it's self-awareness and just awareness of your spouse, and also accepting that.
Some things you're going to love, some things you might not love, but it is what it is. And if you ever try to change someone, if anyone's actually had success with this, please write into the show. If you've ever been able to change someone, or if you've been able to really change someone's mind, let's say you got into the political debate and they're able to say, you know what, you're right, I'm switching over to the other side. If you've done that, please write into the show. I want to know your secret, because I don't believe that you can change anybody. We come in, factory installed, here's the way that we are, right? Now, people can change on their own, don't get me wrong. Right? And it doesn't mean this person can't help you. They may help you even if they're like bored and have no interest just because they love you. But if you want actual true alignment, I find that it works best if both people are excited about what they're doing and the role that they're playing. And sometimes that role is going to be, maybe they don't want to build a business. Maybe they want to work in a different career. Maybe they want to stay home. Maybe that's their role. Like, whatever they do, it's still very, very important. It has to happen, right? But we have to be accepting of that. We have to respect that. We have to appreciate it, be grateful for it, and that's it. That's all I can say about that. I'm still scared from the first question you asked me, sitting across talking about, have you guys made it work? 13 years later, I'm just trying not to fuck it up. That's true. Maybe we end there.
All right. We end there. Have a great one.
On to the next. See you guys.
You've been listening to the Game Changing Attorney Podcast with Michael Mogul. If you found this episode valuable, here are three free ways that we can help you grow your law firm. Number one, download the first chapter of Michael's book absolutely free at gamechangingattorney.com. Number two, you can shoot Michael a text at 404-531-7691 and ask him any question you'd like. You might just hear the answer on the next episode. And finally, number three, if you can leave this podcast a 5-star review, it will help us gain access to more influential thought leaders and bring their lessons learned here to you. For more information on this episode, see the show notes in your podcast app or visit legalpodcast.com.